creativity is a wonderful gift, but it is not who we are. It's what we carry as people. And to have those things separated gives you the flexibility to flow in the seasons of life.
Welcome to the Creative Chats Podcast with Mike Brennan. Welcome, friends, to another episode of Creative Chats. This is the podcast for artists, makers, and content creators, where we talk about creativity, the creative process, and story. Boy, do I have a great episode for you again this week. I mean, I love them all. Let's face it, right? I always come on and I say, I'm excited to bring you this week's guest. And of course I am, because I love speaking to these people. I love finding out their story and finding out just threads of creativity that we can apply no matter what our creative expression is. So before I get to this week's guest, this week's podcast is sponsored by Your Artist Journey course. That's right. It's my course that is for you if you are specifically a visual artist. That's kind of the emphasis that I place upon this. But really, anyone who is looking to create a daily creative habit, they're looking to establish that pattern of creativity in their life, that every day they show up and are able to pour into that and get traction in their work and find your voice and your style. Because here's the thing, I think a lot of times we have this misunderstanding about creativity and about finding our voice and style, that all of a sudden one day it's just gonna show up, that this piece of knowledge or this bit of inspiration is gonna visit us that hasn't before, and then all of a sudden it's like a light bulb that goes on. But really what happens is, it's more like putting in the work every single day and making progress slow but steady, because that's the only way that you're really going to grow as a creative person, is by showing up and doing the work. And so I put together this course talking about my findings in creating a daily creative habit. I've been doing this now for over 8 years at the time of this recording, and there are things that I've learned about how do you show up? How do you harness systems and put systems into place that help you not flirt with your art, but get into a place of flow? If that's you, I want to invite you to check out my course, Your Artist Journey, at yourartistjourney.com. Now for this week, my guest is Matt Tommy. And Matt Tommy is a woven sculpture artist. He's got a thriving community of artists that he mentors through his own program. He is a speaker, an author. He is generally a creative entrepreneur. And I love talking with guys like Matt because he's seen a lot of things in his lifetime. He's had a bunch of different seasons, and we talk about some of those seasons and just what it's like to move in and out of these things. And he also speaks about, you know, what it looks like to combine art and business and faith. And just a word, if you're a person who is not of faith, you don't have a faith background, and you would not subscribe to any particular belief system, I still want to encourage you to give this episode a listen, because there are things that you can learn regardless of some of the particulars of the circumstances that we may discuss. And so I really think you're going to benefit from Matt's insights that he shares. And so I'm going to get out of the way. Make sure that you check out Matt's website, not only for his woven sculptures and his own art, but also his mentoring program and his podcast as well. So without further ado, here is my conversation with Matt Tommy. Matt Tommy, welcome to the show. I'm excited to have you here. Thank you for joining me this morning.
Absolutely. You're welcome, man. I only wish my background was as cool as yours. So now I've got like podcast room envy. So
that's okay. Because right now I'm not really using the video anyway. So, but I'll put a screenshot up and
exactly.
I'll make fun of your backgrounds. Cool. Well, you know, I'm really excited to have you on today. First off, I found you, I want to say last year, maybe around this time, maybe even a little bit later, because of your podcast.
Cool.
And I was like, who is this guy, Matt Tommy? And you know, you were talking about faith and you were talking about art and, you know, business. And I was like, this is kind of really interesting. And so that started my journey into the Matt Tommy world. And
as it were. Right?
Exactly. And I've just really, you know, this, you know, I was just at your conference and just really come to value the things that you talk about, who you are. And that's why I'm excited to have you on the show today, because I really think that you're going to be able to encourage the listeners today in their own journey and share a lot of the wisdom that you've gleaned over the years from your successes and failures, you know?
Yeah.
Like all of us. So
that's right. Well, thanks. That means a lot. I try to bring what I bring out of my own journey. I think for all of us, that's really the only real authority that we have is, you know, you can't lead somebody where you've not been. And so I really try to speak out of the things that have worked out in my life and the things that have not worked out, and just use that journey as a place of inspiration and hopefully a catalyst, you know, for others, other creatives. So thanks.
Yeah, absolutely. So if you wouldn't mind, just for our listeners' sake, can you just give us like the bird's eye view? Who is Matt Tommy? What do you do? What does your art and business look like?
Yeah. So I live in Asheville, North Carolina, which is a real cool, uber creative town, really for over 100 years, but I've not been here that long. We've been here about 10 years, moved from Atlanta about back in late 2009. Have here a studio and gallery in the River Arts District, which is, if you can imagine, 250 artists working in 23 studio buildings within a mile. It's like just a hotbed of creativity, galleries, restaurants, breweries, food. It's a wonderful, wonderful place. I make woven sculpture for luxury mountain homes and coastal homes, primarily here in the Southeast, although we put them all over the world. In addition to that, I've got this other side of my life where I'm equally as passionate about helping artists thrive spiritually, artistically, and in their business. And so I wrote my first book, Unlocking the Heart of the Artist, back in 2010. So we're coming up on the 10-year anniversary of that, which is really exciting. That's has spawned 5 other books, international mentoring program now. We've got about 1,300 artists that are involved in that, plus a couple of live conferences. I travel internationally and here in the U.S. and speak, and then add on top of that a podcast and all of that. And it makes for a really wonderful, wonderfully busy, but wonderfully fulfilling life of both being creative and hopefully inspiring other people to be able to do the same. So,
Yeah. And that's, you know, that's it. That's really where it's at is I think you are a great example of having those multiple income streams, having those multiple expressions that you have your hand in and your heart in, and being able to move back and forth between those things successfully. And, you know, I love
seeing the interesting thing I'll say, Mike, is that, you know, I was just talking to somebody on Facebook Live, sharing this the other day with people. If you were to roll back the tape, you know, because when we're recording this, we're kind of in the thick of this coronavirus meltdown, you know, and everything. Well, if you were to roll back the tape 10 or 11 years ago, we were in the middle of the financial crisis, the housing crisis, the economy tanking. And I was not in that position of having multiple streams of income. I had all of my eggs in the proverbial basket. And I can say that because I'm a basket maker, but I had everything in a business that we had started and grew, and it was successful and loved. And then 3 of our clients went bankrupt in the middle of all that. And that tidal wave of debt and the sucking sound of, you know, receivables not coming in, all of that kind of hit at one time. And we were really left holding the bag, wondering, what, Lord, what are you going to do? And it was a really difficult couple of years trying to figure, you know, out how to do that. But once I began to understand how the next phase of my life was supposed to look, you know, through a lot of prayer, soul searching, talking with my wife, understanding my creative journey, all of that, we intentionally built in multiple streams of income. And now, 10 years later, in this situation, we are, we're taking a hit like everybody is, but man, there is so much stability in our life and in our finances and in our business. And we can weather this because of that. And so it's just a real, you know, black and white kind of from my perspective to roll back the tape and look where we were versus where we are now, and how much better it feels to go through a situation like this on this end of it.
Yeah. And I think times like this indeed cause an awakening for people.
Yeah.
And a realization of like, wow, like I've been living my life a certain way with a lot of assumptions. And now I feel like the rug has been pulled out from underneath me a little bit, and it's panic and trying to catch up and trying to figure things out. And, you know, hopefully some people will be able to make that shift mentally and otherwise during this period so that they can start down that road if they haven't already. So I'm glad you shared that. I appreciate that so much.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, anybody can do that, and we can talk more about that, the details of that, but I think it just requires intentionality. And so many people were trained, you know, in our Western culture, get a job, work for the man. You know, if you do that, everything will work out. And as we know now, these last 20 years, really, I mean, ever since you and me have been in the professional work world, that is not the case anymore. And you have to have other streams of income, and you can build those. You just have to be intentional about it. You can't live on financial or business autopilot thinking that everything's just going to work out if you follow the rules, because the rules have changed. And yeah. And we have to, but at the same time, we've got incredible opportunity within that to create wealth and freedom for ourselves as creatives. So,
yeah. And I was just sharing a couple of podcasts ago that, you know, as creative people, this is what we do. Like yeah. we find creative solutions. It's not just our craft that we're applying our creativity to, but it's also problem solving. It's the business stuff. It's the stuff of life of where we go, okay, I have these constraints, and maybe your constraints aren't necessarily the size of a canvas or a, you know, a budget as far as a project, but now you have a completely different set of constraints. And how are you going to approach that? How are you going to apply your creativity to that? You know?
Right. Yeah. It's huge. It's huge. Cause I think is that I, you know, if you think about it, everything in the world started in the creative process. It started in your mind, right? If somebody had to think of everything that's out there, the chair I'm sitting in, the video I'm talking in, the microphone I'm speaking into, that all was nothing at one point, and somebody had to imagine that. And so I think a lot of times as creatives, we disconnect that beautiful imagination engine that we have from the practicalities of life, our business life, our relationships, and that sort of thing. But the same beautiful, you know, inner faculty that we have, this imagination that we have, can work just as well, if not better, in those situations as it does, you know, in the art world and in the overtly creative world. So
yeah, absolutely. So you used the word start, so I want to use that as a jumping point now.
Yeah.
Where did all this start for you? Like, what was your childhood like? Do you have a vivid memory of either a creative expression or a toy or something that spoke to you early on and said, yeah, you know what? Like this creativity thing, I want to pursue this.
Yeah. So I grew up literally under a Steinway piano. My mom was a voice teacher, choir director at church, choral music director in high school for over 30 years. So music, composing, singing, writing, playing, all that was a big, big part of my life growing up. So that was kind of taken for granted. I came out singing. when I got to into my early teen years, I got involved with Boy Scouts and quickly learned that I loved working with my hands. I loved being in the woods. I loved being inspired by nature. So any opportunity that I've ever had as a kid, young teenager, and even young adult, that I could be in the woods making. So that kind of led into a big craft emphasis in my life of making things out of the woods. Then I started working at summer camps. I started letting my craftiness kind of come out through that. When I was in college, I found a book on basket making, which changed the whole course of my life. I found it when I was 19 years old and started making baskets out of vines and weeds that were out in the back of my yard behind the apartment building. And that now is what I've been making my living with the last 10 years, been making for 25 years now. But so it's creativity has always been a part of what I've done. It's had and continues to, I think for all of us, evolve. Some seasons I've made money off of different parts of my creative life. Like, you know, I owned a graphic design and marketing firm in Atlanta for a number of years. I was a worship pastor at several churches, you know, and ended up doing a lot of the creative at those churches. Then in this last 10 years, I've been a visual artist and gallery owner, and doing commission work. Then I started writing books. So all creative, but just different seasons. And I think that's one of the things a lot of times we as creatives get nervous about is when the season changes. Mm-hmm. And it's like, no, it's the same gift. It's just expressing itself differently. And if you can trust that, you know, it'll work out, but you can't ever get tied to the thing that's working now and thinking that that's always going to work, because things change and you change and your desire to express changes. And at least that's been my, you know, story.
Yeah. And I totally relate to that too, as far as the different expressions. And I remember vividly having these internal struggles with myself thinking, well, I have these different expressions and I want to do all of them. And I want to do all of them at the same time, but I can't. I'm struggling. And I feel right. like I'm juggling or spinning plates. And yeah. I spin this plate and then this one starts slowing down. And I got to run over here. And I always feel like if I'm paying attention to this, then this starts to suffer and vice versa. And I had this internal dialogue that was just, it was stressful.
Yeah.
And I was like, is this normal? Is this like how it's supposed to be? And then, like you said, realizing that first off, these things aren't in competition with each other.
Right.
And it's not like you have this fragmented thing within you that's, you're like, I don't know where to focus my creativity. But realizing again, like you said, it's all coming from the same place. It's just different right. expressions and different seasons.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And I think when you can embrace that, that takes the pressure off and allows you to focus and allows you really to step into the thing that's right for this particular season.
Yeah.
I think that's
the key, I think, for people that want to take their creative, whatever it is that they do. All right. So for me, it's been music, design, writing, visual art, you know, sculpture, whatever it is. If you're going to take it into the marketplace and you want to make a living with that, either part-time or full-time, there's got to be a level, significant level of focus, because otherwise, you see, if you're a hobbyist, if you're just kind of doing what you do for fun, then yeah, play around, play the piano, go over here, do your art, whatever. But if you want to start making money from that, you've got to have a recognizable brand in the marketplace, you know, a cohesive body of work that says, this is who I am and what I do. Otherwise, you'll just get lost in a sea of people trying to take what they do creatively and make it their side hustle and that sort of thing. So I think one of the first things I try to help artists do that are, you know, in our mentoring program and all that is say, listen, I'm glad that you've done all these wonderful things. And yes, you may continue to have a level of expression of all the things that you've done in your life. But if you want to be a full-time artist, if you want to make a living, you've got to be serious about focusing in on an area. And so for me, like, I'll just give you an example. You know, I made my living as a musician for a long time and as a graphic designer and marketing person for a long time. Well, when I felt like the season changed and I was supposed to be doing my sculpture, I was all in on my sculpture, but that I was still like, I would volunteer at my church and play and do music and that sort of thing. All the graphic design skills and marketing skills that I learned, they're now at work in my visual art business, you know, and that sort of thing. I'm playing piano, but I got a piano at home. So it's for my personal enjoyment now. So it's just that the things shift. But I'm very clear at the same time about what it is that I'm doing in this season. And that, I think, is where a lot of artists miss the boat. They're still trying to stay in that juggling mode rather than being able to say yes to the right things and no to the things whose season is not now.
So much wisdom there. Yeah. And I love that you highlight the fact that some of these things now have still have a place in your life, but it's the personal.
Right? Yeah.
It's the, hey, this feeds me and I'm not necessarily looking to make money off this, but I can still have it as a creative expression.
You know? And that, I think, for us is super important. I think one of the biggest mistakes that creatives make is feeling this pressure that somehow the thing that they love to do creatively that feeds them has got to find an expression in the marketplace in order to be valid. And listen, I'm like Mr. Marketplace. I'm like the guy that's helping artists all over the world get into the art, you know, into the business world and share their art and all this sort of thing. And so don't hear what I'm not saying, but I'm saying there are some things or things that we have in different seasons that are just for us. I remember, honestly, when I got into my baskets and I started being overwhelmed by my work and being uber focused on it and that sort of thing, I was praying about it one day, and I felt like I heard inside, listen, I gave you your baskets to give you life, not to be your life. And so there's a level, I think, of where we've always got to be understanding, what is this thing in my life for? What is its purpose right now? And if that changes, it doesn't define who I am. It just helps to define the expression of my life at that point.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And I know I felt the same thing, where there were seasons where I took something on thinking like, yeah, I love this, therefore I want to monetize this, because I mean, hey, if I love doing it, why wouldn't I love doing it even more and making money off of it? But then you shackle that thing with a pressure and a responsibility that almost smothers the thing. And then you come to this place where you're like, this isn't fun anymore. Or this isn't now coming from the same place. It's not giving me the same satisfaction that it once did, because it's no longer just for me. It's no longer just, and now it's subject to, clients and meetings and, all the whatnot and people picking it apart.
Which you got to be in for if you're going to be in business. I mean, that's part of it. But I think I'm just reminded, as you're saying that, I'm thinking of that classic book, The E-Myth, Michael Gerber. He said, most people that start businesses, most entrepreneurs are simply great technicians. They're good at what they do, suffering from a temporary entrepreneurial seizure. somehow they get this crazy idea that, well, if I'm good at this, then I should start a business. And they trade the security of a business for the insecurity, or the security of a job for the insecurity of having their own business, double their hours, take all the responsibility, and somehow that thing's not fun anymore. And they're wondering why. So there's definitely pros and cons, but I think it's important for those of us who are in the marketplace and making a living from what we do creatively to still have creative outlets that don't have any baggage attached to them, that they're just for us and for our enjoyment.
Yeah, absolutely. I find that now for me is music a little bit too.
Yeah.
Where once that was part of my job as well, like worship leading and some other things, like you mentioned, a similar thing. And, that became this thing where all of a sudden, when I didn't have to do it because of my job, I didn't even do it privately.
Right.
And so coming back to it now of a place of, no, this is just for me. This is just to feed my own soul and to have my own creative expression that's aside from anybody else's work or anybody else's critique.
Yeah.
And I think it's important to have those places, because if everything that you create is always subject to clients and committees and those things, then I think you very easily can lose a place of play, experimentation, joy. And those areas are important to have, because they can feed over into the client work and the other stuff too, because we're not as, we're not compartmentalized like that. Things bleed across,
And I think all of us as creatives, you can feel when the well dries up in a certain area, the thrill is gone away. it's like, I do not feel it anymore. In fact, when I on the music side of things, when I was, doing music in churches professionally with band and traveling, writing music and all that kind of stuff, I can remember toward the end of that, it was the craziest thing. Now, my voice is like steel. Like, I can sing for hours and, great pitch and great. I mean, I'm just everything. When the well started drying up creatively, every time I would go on stage professionally, I started having vocal problems. My voice started getting dry. Like, I couldn't, it just like weird stuff started happening. I literally could go home an hour later and it would be perfect. I mean, and I'm like, where were you an hour ago when I needed you on stage? But it was like something internally was like, this is not the season. It's drying up. And I've just learned to accept that and receive it and flow with it, because the problem, I'll tell you, for me at least, Mike, the problem becomes, and the difficulty in this kind of transition comes when creative people's identity is tied to what they do.
Yeah.
And if you have tied who you are to what you do, and then all of a sudden the well dries up, the season changes, there's a new expression on the way, but you won't let go of that old thing, you are literally tying yourself to something that's dead or that is at least dying. And I kind of think of it as you're literally like building a wall around the blessing that's trying to come your way, around, you know, the open doors that are trying to come your way and blocking yourself from receiving the good things that are next. And so I just think, again, you know, creativity is a wonderful gift, but it is not who we are. Mm-hmm. It's what we carry as people. And to have those things separated gives you the flexibility to flow in the seasons of life.
Mm-hmm. Such wisdom there. Yeah, absolutely. And there's a difference between shifting your creativity because you're like searching and because you're like, I got to find the thing. I got to understand. I got to keep moving on because I'm restless. Right. And the difference between that and then also like the juxtaposition of, no, this season is over. Now I can move into this, but I'm who I am. I'm confident of. And my identity, like you said, that is fixed. And so that allows me to move into these creative spaces without the baggage of this insecurity and this desperation that I think sometimes can plague, you know, when we're in a season of not being sure who we are or whatever, you know, if we've been in that place. Because I know I've been in that place.
Yeah.
You know, and it's not fun. Not fun at all.
Yeah, it's absolutely not fun. So I think as much freedom as you can give yourself to be able to flow, not tied to having your identity and what you do, is just a huge thing, because otherwise there's just a lot of weird things that can start to happen. You start putting expectations on your work, on your clients. There begins to be this people can feel that. I mean, you know, people that are working with you, people that you're wanting to buy from you, they can feel if there's a weird mojo in what you're doing, or if there's a manipulation in what you're doing and that sort of thing, as opposed to being able to create freely and sell freely out of a place of power and confidence. That's where you want to be. So,
yeah, absolutely. So I want to ask you a question about, you know, you have this thriving community, I mean, literally, but you have a thriving community of people who you get to pour into, you get to share your own experiences and thoughts and guide. How did that begin? Like, I know that, you know, you talked about your book, and I'm sure that a lot of stuff was kind of probably birthed there, and then that was a springboard. But like, if somebody is listening and they're thinking to themselves, okay, I have my art practice, and also I would love to build up a community around that. But yet right now they don't feel like they have much of a voice, or they're just starting out, whatever the case is, how do you go about doing that?
Well, first of all, 30,000 foot view, there's an ancient piece of wisdom found in the Bible that says, be fruitful and then multiply. And I think that's a principle that I try to live with in my life of, you know, so many people want to multiply first. They want all the show and the big and the scaling their business, you know, all this sort of thing. And I'm like, yeah, roll that back. But what are you being fruitful with right now in your life? That is, what are you being successful with? What's actually producing real results in your life and in people's lives? And so as I look back, and again, if you had asked me 10 years ago to describe what I'd be doing now, there's no way that I'd have any grid for this. It wasn't like this big master plan. No, I mean, it wasn't at all like that. So I'd gone through a season of kind of healing and restoration in my own life as an artist. I had felt this really intense calling to begin to raise up and empower artists. I started doing that by, I had a lady, literally supernatural story, but I had a lady give me an art gallery in Northwest Metro Atlanta. Crazy story. We refurbed it. I started doing small groups, just kind of a support group, really, where I would kind of teach and inspire on Saturday night for artists. And we started having these incredible things happen. People were getting physically healed, emotionally healed. They were getting inspired to do the thing that they were supposed to be doing as artists. And just started seeing this real camaraderie happen with creatives, that so many of them felt alone and abandoned and misunderstood and didn't have community. And so at the very beginning of these two things, or of this journey for me, was this real recognition that creatives needed community, and creatives also needed to be led to understand how their gift works in this world. Was there a greater purpose for that? You know, that sort of thing. And, you know, I'm coming from a Christian perspective, so I believe that we're created by the Creator to be creative as artists, that that's on purpose and that there's a wider purpose for that. And so as I just began to share that, that really caught fire. And that book, Unlocking the Heart of the Artist, was one of the first books that talked about that from a faith-based perspective. And it went all over the world. And so I was then kind of launched into this thing, because, you know, when you have a book, you're an automatic expert, right? And and so thankfully, I started getting invited to speak all over the world. And several friends of mine who I'd met along the way, they were kind of big time speakers, they would have me speak about if they couldn't go, or invite me to speak at a conference. And my name started, you know, getting out there. I started putting things on YouTube. I just started kind of building, as Michael Hyatt would say, building my platform, you know, mm-hmm. but not really knowing, you know, even what that was about. Well, that went on for a number of years, and I was making full time at the same time. All right. In my art business. And I mean, Mike, it was like, so traveling and all that is like super fun for like the first 2 weeks. And then after that, when you're going to speak at a conference, like I would fly out on Wednesday night, get to Europe on Thursday morning, speak Friday, Saturday, Sunday, leave, you know, Sunday night or Monday morning to get back to the US. I mean, you're just like, you're toast. And then I'm trying to make and my family and all this sort of thing. And so that went on traveling like that for a number of years until about 4 years ago. And my wife and I were like, you know what? This is wonderful. We know that I'm supposed to be raising up this army of artists all over the world. And there's a lot of, you know, momentum behind that. But what does that look like? And I just was really at a point of desperation and just, again, kind of a transition. And again, I don't believe there's any, you know, thing that just happens by chance. I believe in divine appointments, and I'm on Facebook and I saw this guy. His name was Mike Dillard. You may have heard him before. Great guy. He's made like $30 million on the internet in the last 15 years. He's younger than I am. I'm 45. He's younger than I am. And he was like, listen, if I had to rebuild my whole empire again, he said, the way I would do it is through a Facebook-based online mentoring program. And he said, I'll teach you how to do it. And the course is $1,500. And if you want to go through it and you'll do it exactly like I say, I'll give you your money back. And he said, it'll take you 6 months. And I was like, what? First of all, I had never even heard of a course for $1,500. I was like, have you lost your mind? I mean, I'm like shaking.
We're artists. Come on. You know,
I'm like, oh my God, you know, and I'm, you know, screenshotting the thing on the, you know, because I'm just convinced at some point that I'm going to put my credit card in and it's going to go into no man's land. And this is going to be like, gotcha. You know, you're a idiot for doing this. You know? And, so he said, it's going to take 6 to 8 months to do it. Well, I did it, and I did it in 3 months. I built this whole funnel, sales funnel. I knew my messaging already. I already had a following of people, but very kind of loosey goosey. We'd already started doing some live conferences and that sort of thing. And, but I put it out there. And also before that, I had started doing that year, I had started doing some online webinars. They were called Choose to Thrive back then. Some people have gone through that at $149. I did 5 90-minute sessions over 5 weeks. And, I had like, 80 people that had gone through that. And that by itself, I was like, you can make money on the internet. I mean, this is like incredible, you know, so I'm starting to see, wow, okay, I got more time to do my art, more time to be with my family. I'm reaching more people and it's less output for me. Well, that for the creative, because we need space to live, right? I mean, that was huge. And honestly, it was the right place at the right time. It was just, again, a divine appointment. I put that out there. We started growing. We've got now 1,300 something members that are all over the world. I mean, Tasmania, New Zealand, Australia, Southeast Asia, all over the world. People are involved in this. And it has radically changed our life. It has radically changed the lives of thousands of artists now that are going through that. And it is given us the financial freedom and time freedom to be able to create a life very intentionally, so that I'm doing my art on my own terms rather than having to do it in as much volume as I did before. And now, talking about multiple streams of income, now I've got speaking and I've got 6 books that are out, so I'm getting paid from that. We've got the mentoring program, individual consulting that I might do. Then I've got my commission work, basketry that's coming in, and all those things kind of come together. Although it seems like a lot, it's still under one umbrella of Matt the artist. And it's a beautiful life. And it's not, you know, it's not everything, you know, roses and tangerines. I mean, it's like there are challenges just like everything growing a growing business. But it's really given us a lot of freedom and stability that we really love. So,
Yeah, I love how you unpack that and how a couple of things I noticed. One is that you kept just walking things out and you were open-handed.
Right.
And you were not so dialed into a result or an outcome, but flexible and self-aware enough to go, okay, I need to go into this with figuring things out as I go, do the best that you can with what's before you and see what doors open. So that's awesome. And I think the other thing too is some, you know, and again, this is our culture today. Unfortunately, we look at things as they are right now, especially for somebody, you know, if it's the highlight reel or however you want to refer to it, but it's very easy for people to look at somebody and go, okay, this is who they are now, and not know the backstory or not take time to find out that backstory of how did they get there? Oh, okay. So this took years.
Right.
Like this wasn't like,
and a team of people, too. Yeah.
And you know, this isn't 6 weeks, this isn't 6 months, you know, whatever, but this is years of unfolding and being faithful to whatever is before you, walking that out. And then the next door opens and then walking through that. And I think sometimes it's easy for us, you know, when somebody's on the other side of that to romanticize and to think like, oh, well, you know, this is incredible. I mean, look at where this person is today and look what they're enjoying and look what they've built and whatever else, but not, you know, thinking about their own journey in those terms to go, that's what we all are doing. We're all just trying to figure this out one step at a time. We have our best guesses and we have our plans as much as we can, but we hold things loosely.
Yeah.
And we just try to be faithful in the season that we're in. And I think that there's a, you have to be intentional about being joyful in the season you're in too.
Yeah.
Because otherwise you can get so future oriented and so stressed out thinking, well, it's not happening fast enough for me, or it's not happening the way that I thought it would, or, and then the comparison trap creeps in there, all that kind of junk. And so I love that you took the time to unpack that as you did, because it gives us the inside look and behind the scenes of like, yeah, this was your journey of that. And it's not an overnight thing. It's not instant, you know?
You know, one of the beautiful stories I think of leadership, if you look at the life of Jesus was somebody that, you know, apart from, you know, religious teachings or whatever, he was somebody that had tens of thousands of people following him and speaking to him and in hordes, like daily. All right. And yet he was also the same person that took time to go find the one sheep that was lost. And you're not qualified to speak to the thousands unless you go take time to look for the one. Mm-hmm. And I think that's so important for anybody that wants to grow a business, especially online, you know, because there's a lot of slimy online marketers out there. I mean, let's just call it what it is. And, you know, people talk, you know, scale your business and, you know, like you're going to be able to go to Bermuda and drink Mai Tais and not have to do any work on it. I mean, I don't know who they are, but, you know, an online business is just like any business. It's about people. It's about relationships. It's about caring for people. And you've got to do that. And as you do that at every stage of the journey, that's what I'm talking about with be fruitful and then multiply. As you take care of people and grow the systems and grow the business as it needs to grow, over time, you'll enlarge your capacity to be able to handle things that are larger. And it's funny to me because I, you know, people all the time, they're like, whoa, this membership thing that you got going, this is so great. And I want to do that too. And I'm like, that's great. And if you know, you're supposed to be doing that, awesome. But I'm like, people have no clue. I mean, no clue what it takes to put on like an event like we just did for 500 people coming in, you know, and 10 speakers over 4 days, or to have a mentoring program with 1,300 people that each one of them have a credit card and an email address and customer service issues and my billing needs to be changed and I got a problem and I can't access this. I mean, you talk about you think you're busy now and you can't do that by yourself. This, you know, there's a romanticization about being a solopreneur, which is wonderful, but you can only grow, you know, as large as you grow your team. And so that's been, I think, the biggest challenge for me. In this season in my life, I was like, I want to do as much as I can do with as few people as possible. Mm-hmm. And it's like, okay. And very quickly, because what we were doing was really being blessed, it was like, all right, you're going to get to this level and that's going to be it, unless you decide to build a team. Well, we did, and we're continuing to build that team. And that's where the growth and the real power comes. But that's happened over years. And I think if you short circuit that process, you lose the beautiful learning opportunities along the way. And you may grow something like it may look like fireworks as opposed to, you know, just a up and down, as opposed to something that really is built on a real strong foundation for the long haul. So,
Yeah, absolutely. So without prying, is there a creative struggle or issue that you're facing right now that you're needing to lean into and figure out, like apply creativity to a certain, you know, challenge that you have right now?
My life is pretty perfect, Mike, pretty much. can't believe you asked that. Wow. No, No, I think the very real thing that we're in right now is that that side of our business has grown so much. The mentoring, the writing, speaking, all that sort of thing has grown so much that it has put, I don't want to say pressure, but it has changed the dynamic of how much I'm able to focus on my own personal artwork, because I built my business, you know, multi-six-figure business. I mean, I built that business on doing commissioned, high touch, high interaction work with high net worth individuals. All right. And just by the nature of what I'm doing now, all right, as far as the podcast and the conferences and the mentoring and all that sort of thing, which is obviously very lucrative, but it's also very work intensive as well. It's changed the dynamic of how art is being expressed through me. So we're in the process of determining, okay, what does this look like in terms of having a 2,000 square foot studio anymore? Do I need that anymore? And all this nice little platitudes that I just said about, and don't have your identity tied up in what you do. Yeah, all that's coming. How do you know that, Matt? Because that's what I'm going through right now. Is the thing that I'm having to deal with, you know? So I'm looking at, you know, I've got a couple of galleries that have offered to sell my work, very successful, you know, galleries here in Asheville. So I'm looking at switching the model of what I'm doing, producing less, producing on my own terms, selling in a different way. Doesn't mean I'm not an artist anymore, but it just means I'm having to shift. And honestly, that's been like a year conversation of us having to figure out what that means to do the internal work first, and then out of that, do the external work. And so, yeah, I'm having to absolutely use creativity and lean into listening to my wife, her perspective on that, because she's a genius at, you know, the practicalities of things. And we really are a great team in that. And so, yeah, that's where we are right now. But it's good, because you realize that as I say yes to the thing that's now, I'm making room to continue to have beautiful expression of creativity in my life, even though it may not look like the season that brought me to this place. Mm-hmm. And that can be confusing and kind of crazy to walk through. So,
yeah, it's true. Cause I think there's something in us that, even though we may not be in the place of, you know, full-time position someplace else where we have the security or whatever, there's still something in us that still seeks that security, even in our own work and in our own path where we've been like, okay, this is what brought me here. This is what, you know, I'm doing majority of my work in, and this is what it looks like right now. So there's almost this, this temptation to be, okay, good. Now I can let my guard down a little bit because I've got my flow. I've got the things figured out. And now I can kind of just, you know, we wouldn't necessarily say coast, but maybe our attitude behind it creeps in there and goes, yeah, I think I can coast a bit on what I've established, what I've built, when really our journey as creatives is constantly changing.
Right.
And we're constantly adapting or not, and then having to face some of the realities, sometimes harsh realities, of what happens when we don't adapt.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. And some of the, you know, I think that's true for anybody. If you, success can be your biggest barrier to continue to succeed, you know, because there is that thing of, okay, I finally made it. Now I don't have to do quite as much. That's the time where you need to keep pedaling. When I started this, I'll just give you an example. And I think I've done enough inner work. I really don't feel, honestly, I don't feel competition with other people, but I want to say this just to put this out there. When I started doing what I'm doing in terms of mentoring and that sort of thing, there was nobody doing this from an art and faith perspective. I mean, at all. Now, that's the only question that I get when I go speak to somebody from other leaders. They're like, oh, that was so great. Now tell me, how do you do what you're doing now? Because people see it, they romanticize it. They think, oh, Matt's got this big thing going on. And so for me, like, I've got to be true to who I am, stay in my lane, realize everybody else can do what they want to do, but there's never going to be another me. People may connect with another person, but there'll always be people that connect with me. And I got to be true to that, not feel like I'm in competition with other people. But it's just a very real reality. You know, when I started, there was no other people doing this. And now there are. And some people are doing really great things, and some people are struggling, whatever. But we're all learning from each other. And I think that that for me keeps me on my toes in what we're doing online, because things change so fast. In the art world, I think that was one of the real insulating factors that I had as an artist, and still have as an artist. Nobody does what I do. Mm-hmm. I'm the only person that, so there's absolutely no competition. And I just read a quote this morning from Kenny Rogers, who just passed away. He said, you got two choices: either do it better than everybody, do the same thing everybody's doing and do it better than them, or do something that nobody else is doing and don't have any competition. And that's kind of what I've always tried to do, is the blue water perspective, if you will. You know, don't get in the water where all the piranhas are, all the red water. Go to the blue water, do something that nobody else is doing. And that way you minimize competition and all that. So.
Great. So one last question, Matt. Is there, and I know, I'm sure you can think of a multitude of things, but is there one specific piece of advice that somebody gave you that has really been instrumental in shaping your art and your business?
Yeah, you know, when I moved to Asheville, a friend introduced me to a woman, Billy Ruth Suddeth was her name, who was really the first person I'd ever known in the fine craft world as a basket maker, who had made a lot of money selling her work and was very successful. I mean, in the Smithsonian and in all the, I mean, just very, very well recognized and collected as an artist. We got to be friends and are still friends. She's moved now away, different part of North Carolina. But I went, when I was first meeting her, I went to her studio about an hour north of here. And I said, Billy Ruth, I said, now tell me, I said, as a new artist, you know, what, how did you do this? You know, how did you go to a show for all these years and sell out, selling work that was $2,000 to $5,000 a piece and all this kind of stuff? How did you build this incredible business? And she said something that was very simple, but at the same time, it was very profound. She said, Matt, every day I did something with my baskets. And I was like, oh. And again, as I roll the tape back, that's that principle: be fruitful first and then multiply. It's the daily approaching of your work, the daily studio habit, the daily, you know, sending an email to somebody, applying for a show, getting in the studio and doing some work, being creative, filling your creative well, doing something every day and building that regimentedness of habit into the creative journey, all of a sudden, it doesn't look like much when you first start doing it, but over time, all of a sudden, this tidal wave of momentum begins to happen. And that is applicable no matter what industry you are in, whether you're in the business world or you're a working artist or whatever. It's that our life is the fruit of the habits that we employ. And I just really took that to heart and started where I was. And it's been an incredible journey and continues to be as I try to practice that and encourage others to do it as well.
Yeah. And that's my story too, is the daily habits, you know, and the momentum, like you said. So I can attest to that as well.
Yeah.
So, awesome. Really appreciate this time.
Absolutely. Real quick,
before we go, where can people find you? How can they keep tabs with what you're doing?
Yeah. So if you want to see my artwork, you can go to matttommy.com. If you want to see all the things I'm doing with mentoring artists, the podcast, our online courses and mentoring program, you can go to matttommymentoring.com. All of those will lead you to our social media platforms on Facebook and Instagram. Again, at Matt Tommy or at Matt Tommy Mentoring in both places. So.
Perfect. I'll make sure I list that in our show notes so people can follow along easily.
Yeah.
So sweet. Well, again, thank you so much for our time today, Matt. And I really appreciate just who you are, what you do. And I'm just thrilled to be able to walk alongside you as well.
My pleasure. Thanks.
Thanks for listening today. I'd appreciate it if you would subscribe, leave a rating and a review. It really helps this podcast be seen and heard by others.